Thanks for joining us again. Decided to get in on a bit of Wesley Snipes. Sort of, this was when he was sort of just starting to come into things, I think, wasn't he? This might have made him a bit of a star for a while, but this is the 1992 actioner Passenger 57. Before we get to that, Jared, what have you been watching this last couple of weeks?
Quite a bit. I started with Dirty Work.
Is that the Norm MacDonald one?
Yeah. I don't know why. I think I just came across a Norm MacDonald something or other, and then I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. It mentioned Dirty Work, and I was like, I remember that, but not vividly. I'd seen it once, so I went back and watched it.
Is Dave Chappelle in that?
No. Yeah, it's a few laughs, but it's not great. Transformers Rise of the Beasts popped up on Paramount. So
how'd that go?
I'd better have a look. It's okay. It's not as good as Bumblebee, but it was okay. It just kind of...
Is it carry on from Bumblebee?
Yeah, so it's another prequel, but it's after Bumblebee. So it's set before the first...
Because you know what? They got themselves back on track with Bumblebee.
They did.
And have they fucked it up?
Yeah, well, somewhat. But well, it's just the same old stuff. Like, Bumblebee felt a little bit fresher in some ways, perhaps because it was a sequel, just took, you know, different
times. Well, Bumblebee was almost like a coming-of-age angle.
Yeah.
That I think really worked well.
Yeah. So this one's not quite as good. I found Popeye.
The Robin Williams movie. Film.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
And I had vague memories of it from watching it when I was really young, but I'd heard it was, you know, pretty average and weird and whatnot. So I watched it.
Nothing's changed?
It is a little bit weird. Like, the story kind of meanders a little bit. But fuck, there's some, like, it's almost like a stage musical in some parts. Like, you watch scenes and there's so much shit going on in the background and stuff that it's almost like just a really impressive fucking coordination of people and movement and acting. And I actually really enjoyed it from that perspective. And obviously the set was something else that was quite impressive as well. But yeah, that was the most impressive stuff about it. Robin Williams was excellent, as was Shelley Duvall. They fit the roles
well.
Perfectly. The casting was fucking outstanding, but it was just a bit of a strange, like, the story was just a bit all over the place.
There's a fantastic chapter about it in that book that I've got, Fiasco, where it talks about all the money problems and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Really interesting, because I didn't know a lot about it either.
Yeah, certainly interesting to go back to. I watched The Haunting in Venice.
Oh, yes, sir.
Not bad.
Yeah,
not
okay,
bad.
Okay,
I think
good.
I probably liked it better than the last one.
Well, it had less anti-vaxxers than cannibals in it, so
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, true. Well,
Kenneth likes that one better,
yeah,
too.
To be seen. Who knows? You know? Yeah. I mean, at the time of release, correct. So Kenneth got to do a press tour with a smile on his face. Him and Tina Fey are quite good together, and there's actually a couple of really comedic moments from Poirot, which I think is... where Branagh might be kind of best with
him.
Like I think he's quite good as Poirot, but a couple of the comedic moments, he absolutely fucking nails.
Has that also got, God, her name escapes me now, but she won an Oscar this year.
Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, she's in that.
She's
one.
In it. Yeah. I would say, yeah, check it out. Right. I watched Men.
Oh, that's weird A24. Shit, isn't it?
It gets a bit strange. We're talking sort of society levels towards the end, but...
Oh. Fucking hell, no one needs to see any more of that stuff.
All right, look, to me, this was one of those ones where it seemed like it was trying to be, you know, super smart, a lot of subtext and things like this, but I felt the message was very upfront from the start.
Is that an Alex Garland?
Yeah. And obviously, you know, fuck, he's a smarter bloke than I am. Maybe there is something. I can tell you there was some symbolism that I was missing. There was this kind of thing that kept this creature that kept showing up that was tied to some sort of some of the religious elements there that I was just like, fuck, what is that? I don't know what you're going on about there. But I got, you know, the whole things around the toxic masculinity part were pretty upfront, I felt. Yeah. I watched The Blackening.
So did I.
Yeah, which I've been waiting for quite some time. Yeah, I thought it was good. Quite funny.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid spoof of... Yeah. Slasher films. And
the whole thing was, you know, was the take on black characters in those movies, obviously. So it was quite funny when they, you know, they start those scenes where they start fucking rating each other's blackness and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. It's quite funny. It's you know, quite on point a lot of the time.
I got a good chuckle too out of the end where they go, should we call the cops? And they all start fucking laughing.
Yeah. I think the only downside I felt was that the actual slasher part of it was pretty clear from the get-go. Or any sort of elements that you might have been trying to work through. Or
yeah,
twist.
There were no surprises.
There was no surprises, but I did really enjoy the movie. I went back to Point Break.
The original.
Fuck, I'm not going back to the remake.
I haven't seen the remake, but shocker. I don't actually like the first one.
Well, the first one I think is good. Like, it's goofy. It's fucking goofy. I mean, Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze strutting around trying to use the surfing lingo and, oh, yeah, look out for that guy. His name's Warchild and all this sort of shit. I'm like, that is goofy as hell, but there's something about it that just works. And there's something about the relationship between the two that's believable.
Look, Swayze. So I still like Swayze in the film.
Well, that's the most believable thing about it. Anybody could fall for that bloke's charms.
Oh, fuck yeah, so I did.
Him leading some sort of cult of surfers.
Fuck, if he said to me, look, we're putting together a small commune, I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, they were in Australia at the end, of course, so, you know, Bell's Beach. The funniest thing about that.
When Peter Phelps
rocks
up.
Peter Phelps. Ah, oh, fucking no one's going out there, mate. Then he puts on the most Aussie accent he can muster, and then we get onto the beach with some bloke that can't seem to do one.
So why didn't we just leave it at Peter?
We should have just let Peter
fucking
in there.
Fucking hell.
Because, I'm expecting as when he was walking past, I'm expecting, Utah, what are you doing? You just let him go. But it's some bloke that seems to be American who just cannot muster the accent.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Why not switch it over?
I wanted to rewatch it just to make sure my ears weren't tricking me. I quite enjoyed it.
I just ask this? And I can't quite remember, but is James Cameron involved in that? Somewhere?
It's Catherine Bigelow directed it. She was married to him at the time, wasn't she?
Cameron a producer or a writer or something?
I don't know. I don't think. Pretty sure he wasn't a writer.
Because he was married to her.
He was, yes. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was some involvement, but I don't believe he was credited as a writer.
And look, and this is also peak Busey, too.
Oh, Busey was fucking awesome.
Yeah, Busey's great, and Swayze is great.
Yeah, Busey was fucking fantastic. I don't know why I keep laughing at it, but the part where he sends him, he goes, oh, you know, this place has got great maple sandwiches or whatever. Go get me two of them, and then Keanu gets out of the car and starts, and for no reason, Busey leans out the window and goes, Utah, two. Give me two. Stop laughing at the bloke.
Yeah.
But this is
at the peak of his powers.
This is where he's
still...
Oh, was
this after he had the accident?
Yeah. It was after, but it was still where you could see there's just this hint of loose cannon, but he's still delivering, like, genuinely strong acting.
Yeah, because this was around the time of, like, it was Point Break, Predator 2, those sorts of films. So he was still producing the goods.
Yeah.
Prior to, but something, a screw had been shook loose in the accident.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could see it sort of progressing. But
he was also not a fan of helmets on motorbikes before he had the accident.
Yeah, well, I think
compulsory helmets were not his bag.
Possibly should have changed his tune on that one.
Perhaps, yeah.
But, yeah, he's, there you go, James Cameron, executive producer.
Ah.
So he was involved in that capacity.
Because Bigelow had another movie around that time that he wrote. Was it Strange Days? Might have been Strange Days.
Mm.
Which I think was better. I remember Strange Days being really interesting.
I don't know if I could say it's better than Point Break. Point Break is strong.
I find Point Break, like, I personally, for some reason, have never grabbed Point Break. Everyone else loves Point Break and everyone talks about it. Is it an 80s classic or is it a 90s?
90s.
90s action classic, but I just can't come to that because I'm just like, it wouldn't get a Guernsey anywhere in my top 100 action movies.
Well, you're fucking wrong there. It's got to be a top 100. Jesus Christ.
I mean, let's say top 50. It wouldn't make my top 50.
But I think it'd still be a chance. Like, there are some good movies.
I haven't seen the remake.
It's not top notch, But I think there is something there. Like, I think it's a very strong, like, I would have it as probably around a four.
I mean, if you want to see fucking Anthony Kiedis get shot in the foot.
That was great.
Is Flea also in that one?
No.
No.
Flea's not in that.
I thought the whole band was in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's really.
What's the remake like? Honestly.
The remake's fucking awful. But yeah, the extreme stuff, like some of those sequences where they're jumping out of the plane and stuff like that, they are pretty visually spectacular.
Oh yeah, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Action wise, because you got your surfing, you got your
There's some scenes of the bank robbery stuff that actually are pretty fucking good as well. But it's light on action. There's not as much of that. There's more of let's hit the surf or let's jump out of the plane. Yeah,
they're building their relationship, aren't they, between those guys?
Yeah. But I think it's all right. I don't think it's top notch. If someone said to me, Point Break's my favorite, is the best action movie ever, I would staunchly disagree.
Could I ask but this question good. About the remake? Does it do away with the surfing stuff, and does it go to somewhere else? Because I remember briefly seeing the trailer. Was it Extreme Sports?
Yeah, there was flight suits and shit like
Holy
that.
Holy shit. Flight suits, yeah.
I can't remember the ins and outs, but there was definitely those little body flight suits down a mountain.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I can't remember what the other ones were, but I had no time for it whatsoever.
I mean, I believe, was it Edgar Ramirez? Is he in it? As the bag, as Bodie?
Yeah.
And he's a pretty handy actor. No? He says, all right, okay. You know what?
I need you to watch it.
I've got to watch it.
Yeah, you got to watch the remake.
Next episode, I'm coming back with fucking Point Break remake.
Yeah.
In fact, you know what? I'm going to do a double banger.
Yeah, wait
original
till
remake.
Yeah?
Yep.
Wait till you hear yourself back talking about Edgar Ramirez and revisit directly after the movie.
What I mean is I've seen him in other things.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been pretty
That's
good.
Probably fair, but I hated it. I thought it was so bad.
Fuck, I don't know who that – I think it might have been an Aussie, wasn't it? In the
Yeah, yeah.
In Luke, the Utah role.
Luke Bracey.
And his name doesn't ring a bell with me, but
– I think, yeah, I don't think there was a lot coming afterwards.
All right, what else you got?
It was bad. After Point Break, well, I watched a couple of episodes of The Dynasty.
Oh, yeah, so that's going
Apple
well.
Apple TV Plus on the Patriots. Pretty good. They speed through some of the early parts, but it's funny to go back and think about, if Brady fumbles that pill, is the Dynasty impacted somewhat? I think it was two games prior to the Super Bowl. But the episodes that I'm getting into now are getting into the cheating, which is
the
fun.
Deflated balls?
No, I think they're going to come to that after, but they're getting into the videoing of other coaches' play calls and stuff like that. Spygate.
Oh, for fuck.
So it's going to be interesting. Like, this is something that the Bulls...
So this is a little bit more dirtier. Yeah. Is that right? Because they're almost shining a light on some shit that was... In the dynasty,
yeah,
not necessarily all
correct.
Good.
Interesting. The Bulls dynasty stuff, the Last Dance. Obviously, there was some dirt. There was some fractured relationships and things.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
There was no controversy about them whipping everyone's ass.
Correct, and that's what this one. It's going to be interesting to see what sort of conversations it brings forth about the legitimacy of some of what they did.
Because you'll have people lining up to sting him.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll
have plenty
of people.
It won't be hard up for fucking people to give info.
Yeah, but the last couple of episodes were really interesting because they focused heavily on the what was his name? The bloke that got injured. Fucking was it Drew Brees? The guy that was the quarterback.
Yes, Drew. Well, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Who was the quarterback starting the season that they won the first
He got
Super
injured
Bowl.
And then...
He got injured and then he was back healthy and Bill Belichick stuck with Brady. But they parallel that to, not quite a decade, but I think it was about 8 years beforehand or something when he was coaching in Cleveland. And he did the same thing with... there was a quarterback that had been there for 8 or 9 years or something that was kind of the heart and soul, even though they were a down-and-out sort of ragtag team.
Got injured, same thing.
Well, he resold him. He basically said he couldn't do it anymore. So they got rid of him and it kind of, the fans just never forgave him. And so it was sort of you know, bringing it around to saying he's got this decision to make again. Is he going to do it to another sort of beloved figure again and have it fucking blow up in his face when he's stuck with Brady? But I thought it was a really cool story in the fact that, you know, obviously the
I'm assuming Belichick's talking in this.
Yeah, yeah. Belichick's talking, Brady's talking, Breeze is talking, everyone's talking. So it's really interesting to see from the angle that he had, you know, he was not pleased about it.
Breeze?
Yeah. But he accepted it. And then there was another one where he came, had to come on because Brady got hurt in the playoffs and fucking won the game for him.
Right.
But then goes back to the bench and doesn't play again when they make the run to the Super Bowl.
So handy backup to have, though.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Bledsoe. It's not Breeze. It's Bledsoe. Drew Bledsoe. So he, yeah, because he'd been there for near a decade and was a star quarterback, had taken them to one Super Bowl that they didn't win. So it was really cool to see that, really cool to hear them talking about it, see the interviews of the time of Breeze, Bledsoe, saying, I'm not happy about it, but Tom Brady saying he was a pro, he did the right thing, he was still rooting for us, and, you know, and had that moment in the playoffs.
It would have been interesting if he hadn't taken it well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he didn't. Like, there was definitely some ill feeling, and his wife is on there saying, you know, still feel it was disrespectful and whatnot. But then you think about, well, fuck, imagine if Belichick hadn't have made the tough call and Brady doesn't get a start.
Right.
Bledsoe comes back in, Brady might have to look elsewhere for his opportunity.
Yes, like, he might leave.
Yeah. So,
well, fuck, it's no different. Well, similar, I guess it's a little bit similar with the whole, the Admiral and Duncan, when Popovich had to go and speak to the Admiral and say, look, mate, you're not the man anymore.
Mm.
You need to take a back seat. And I believe the Admiral was upset.
Yeah, upset. I think part of that came around to a contract negotiation too.
Oh, did it?
When they were looking for a certain figure and
the Admiral wasn't keen on that figure?
Popovich was saying, oh, well, we can't pay you that because
that
you can't
that figure's
really
not there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But look.
But the Admiral accepted it.
Pack your bags.
The Admiral accepted it.
Is that basically what he was saying to him?
Collected another championship.
Was he basically saying, listen, you can win a championship or you can fuck off somewhere else?
I don't know if that's what he was saying. But who knows?
Tell you pretty straight. He probably did.
Yeah. But it's high quality. I like it.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
So as I said, I'm really looking for the next couple of episodes where there's something that we haven't really seen on one of these glowing.
Yeah, where they really rip someone a new asshole.
Yeah, so hopefully they go right into it and hopefully they get, you know, the opposition sitting on there going, you pack of pricks and all this sort of shit.
So I hope they do. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That was probably what was missing.
Get some people people who are happy to just, you know, put the class aside and just
roll in and dish it out.
Yeah. So that was one of the better things I watched. I checked out Code 8 Part 2.
Code 8 Part 2.
Correct. It's the Stephen Amell
cousin. I remember you talking about this and saying it was all right.
Yeah, well, they did the first one. It wasn't too bad. This one, same. I was left a bit wanting. Like, there's some ideas that should have probably been sort of drawn out a little bit further because they start to bring in some, you know, some police corruption and whatnot in amongst the whole, this is how the people with powers are being treated and, you know, they take a bit of a, it's almost a page out of Magneto's book with how, you know, one of them wants the community of people with powers to act and wants them to kind of band together and kind of put up a wall between them and average people. I feel like they could have got a little more out of it. There was some things that just seemed to be teetering on really cool ideas that didn't quite get there, but it was enjoyable enough. And I checked out Cemetery Man.
Oh, is that the one with Rupert Everett?
Yeah, yeah. What's the Italian name? Delamorte.
Yeah. Is that any good?
Look, it's
the idea's cool, isn't it?
It's very out there. Yeah, it's starts off with something that I was right in for. It did lose me a little because it's very kind of, you know, one thing was described as, you know, it's mashing up like an old school zombie horror with kind of art house sort of picture, and the themes get really sort of mixed up in the art house sort of stuff down the stretch, and things are going on that get a little bit crazy, and you're losing. I was losing track of things.
So you were stuck in the art house,
but it looked fantastic. There was some really awesome effects. There were some sequences that just looked like magnificent. They looked like fucking paintings and shit like that, the way that they were shot, which was awesome. And Rupert Everett was fantastic. I think it's one of those ones I have to go back to a couple of times to sort of get in the weeds a little bit.
Fair enough. Is that everything?
That's everything.
It's everything for you.
Other than, you know, dipping my toes into the Full Moon catalogue again with bad CGI Gator.
Yeah. Well, look, as I said, I watched The Blackening and enjoyed it. For some fucking reason, we went back to One Day, episodes 3 and 4, because I said to my wife, look, everyone keeps telling me this is really good. It must come good somewhere. It was fucking crap.
Awesome.
Like, there's just nothing there. Like, I'm just sitting here going, these characters are so bland. What? Why is anyone emotionally invested? There must be something, Jared. Somewhere along the line, someone must die or something like that happens, right? But I think we've shelved it. We've shelved it. Decided that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, if there is a moment in episode 6, but episodes 1 through 5 were shit ass, so you didn't enjoy them, does that really matter?
That doesn't matter, no. Not in my opinion. I watched the documentary Can I Tell You a Secret on Netflix. They finally got it right, Jared. 2 episodes, 50 minutes apiece. She runs lean, covers the entire situation.
Yeah, right.
Boom.
What was the theme of this one?
Basically, someone was essentially contacting all these women through their social media accounts and saying, can I tell you a secret? And then they would just bombard them, their friends, their family, their contacts. They would make up stories, tell them that they were, she's rooting... Like, tell their boyfriends in through social media messages, oh, your girlfriend's rooting this bloke and all this sort of stuff.
Mm.
It went on for years. I mean, Jared, you can't possibly have a job if you're doing this because this was happening 24 hours a day to, like, fucking 50 different people.
Mm.
And basically the coppers essentially couldn't do – well, they felt like they couldn't do anything because no one was being, you know – physically hurt or anything. And then this bloody local copper down in, you know, middle of nowhere, England, he catches the case on the fly and decides, yeah, there's something here. we might dig into this a bit. And he makes it happen. And the ending is quite satisfying.
Yeah.
Cool. Because it's an online stalking case where they were basically saying, you know, you'd be lucky to get 6 months for that.
Yeah.
So it plays out well. Probably one of the best Netflix docos I've seen in a long time. I watched a comedy that recently came to Netflix called Players.
Mm-hmm.
Had Damon Wayans Jr. in it. Look, well made, a cast of reasonable actors who we've seen, but when you call it a comedy, it's got to be funny.
You'd think.
I laughed one time.
Okay.
And the rest of it, I was just sitting here going, why is this kind of interesting? Because the whole thing was this group of friends used to use, like, plays to pick up one-night stands. They'd pull these bullshit stories and that sort of stuff. And I was just like, this is so fucking stupid.
Yeah, okay.
Avoid it. Speaking of one to avoid.
I don't plan on seeking it out.
Speaking of one to avoid, I watched Jeepers Creepers Reborn.
Yeah.
Oh. Holy Christ, Jared. a portion of this was shot on a green screen, even though they're in a cemetery.
Okay. I am going to watch this.
It's crap.
I am going to check it out.
And at one point, right, this woman comes out, because it's a Horror Hound Weekend is sort of included as a plot device, and it is actually Horror Hound putting its labels and shit on everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so at one point out comes this kind of, like, I guess you'd say she was like a tarot card reader or something, and she starts offloading this absolutely fucking shocking accent for meant to be like New Orleans and stuff. And for a split second I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, is that Gina Gershon? And I'm like, what? What is she doing? It wasn't, thank fuck, because I looked it up. But the performance... Possibly the worst performance I've ever seen, I reckon.
Right.
This character rolls out and it is just laughable the whole time. The movie is just a debacle. Debacle, Jared.
Okay.
I think this might be the worst one
Well,
I think there's another one after it I believe is better.
I dodged the third one because I made a decision to not support fucking Victor Salva.
Yeah, so true. I have dodged the third one. I don't know if there's a connection between this one and the third one, but I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure he didn't have any involvement in like the writing or directing or anything like that. But
and there's one after it. Jeepers Creepers is something else.
One of my sort of horror hot takes was the first Jeepers Creepers is shit.
Yeah.
I don't think that one's any good. Oh, the opening of it in the trucks and stuff.
That was all right.
Is great. But then when we found out that was pretty much lifted note for note from an episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, was it? Jesus.
Yeah.
The entire premise of it is fucking stupid. And the whole movie, I remember hating it.
Yeah.
The second one I liked a little bit more.
Funnily enough, the part that works is the Unsolved Mysteries thing.
Yeah.
I reckon Jeepers Creepers 1 up until they circle back to see what the dumping stuff was, is, for me, that's where the movie just
is like, this, was it Unsolved Mysteries Robert Stack or was it Unsolved Mysteries Dennis Farina?
No, Robert Stack.
Stack.
I'm pretty sure it was a Stack one.
Stack.
Check it out on YouTube. You'll be surprised at how much it actually looks like the fucking movie.
What became of it?
It was a murder case.
Ah, okay.
These people saw a
killer dropping a body somewhere.
But they had the interaction on the road too with the person like riding up behind them and that sort of shit.
Interesting.
And then they saw the person dumping something off on a property on the side of the road, much like you see in the movie.
The second movie is actually my preferred.
Is that the one with the fucking kid, the high school kids on the bus?
Yeah, that
me. I thought that was shit.
That was shit too, but I'm not saying it was great, but it was more like in the kind of slasher-ish mold.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was probably better than the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. But I think the first one's got a fucking, seems to have a reputation that's fucking not on.
It's one of those ones, like Madman, Adam. I can't.
Don't get me started.
I don't care.
You know I don't like that movie. Fucking hell. I watched Blockers. Watching John Cena chug a beer through his butt. You do realise that people actually do that?
Yeah.
Like, it gets into your bloodstream quicker. Why do you then?
Pre-drinks
at my place, bring your own fucking arse muddle.
Yeah. As far as I was aware, there was there was factors around taste of the beer that I actually enjoy as well.
I'm a slow bird. I don't need it in my poop hole, so I'm shit faced by the time I get to a nightclub.
Yeah.
I need to, and I've got a wet butthole as well.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about the repercussions when it's come back the other way either. Does that change consistencies and things? Because I don't need that. I'm happy to just pass me a stubby.
It means
you
can also bypass vomiting, though.
Yeah, well.
I believe, because it's already.
that's part of the fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, fucking hell, I'm sorry to say. Yeah. But I must admit, I laugh, and I shouldn't because it's juvenile as fuck, but when he's chugging the beer through his bum and then the cops come and he flinches and it all backfires into fucking Baron Holtz's face.
Look at you. I mean, look at you.
I mean, you swear it was the fucking funniest thing I'd ever seen. Yeah.
That's what I'm led to believe.
I mean, it's up there. And Jared, finally, last night, I thought I'd actually watch a good movie for once. I sat down and I watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Ooh, okay.
Which was fucking awesome.
Yeah. It is.
Awesome.
Excellent movie.
Really interesting thing to do with Spider-Man. Instead of going the standard route that all the live-action ones seem to have gone, including the Tom Holland ones, apart from No Way Home, which I felt took the Spider-Verse angle, in fact. But I just really liked what they did with this one.
Yeah.
And all this different Spider-Mans that had come through the vortex and then
yeah.
I mean, you had a fucking kick-ass cast of voice.
Oh, brilliant.
Unbelievable. But like, they really nailed that.
It also the multiverse stuff was
It was phenomenal.
As good as you could have it. Like the connection between fucking old, unfit Peter Parker. Yeah, I loved him. Morales. That was awesome.
She left him. And then you see him just sitting in his apartment, fucking face down on his bed like this. Yeah. In his Spider-Man suit. And he's sort of saying something like, I was working out, getting fit. He's just sitting there in a chair.
Yeah.
I liked it. No, I thought some of it was pretty funny too, which I thought was good.
Since we last spoke, actually, I saw a Twitter post from one of the people that was involved in the art for that movie.
Mm.
And they just mentioned that in the past 5 months, they've been pitching Warner Brothers for a Batman Beyond movie. And I can attach a couple of the art
panels.
Fuck me. I was just sitting there going, oh, God, this has to happen. Yeah. It looks awesome, just like that one.
What's the sequel like?
Sequel's excellent, too. Really, really good. I think, I'm hoping they knock the third one out of the park, too, because if they do, it'll just be it'll be
a good
hard to top for a trilogy of films. I don't know which one I liked better. They're both fantastic.
Okay, because Binge has got Across the Spider-Verse on it now.
It's excellent. It is also excellent. And they take the kind of multiverse thing to the next level.
But then again, I've got fucking Point Break films to watch.
Yeah, I know.
So it's in the queue.
Just you know, given that you dislike Point Break 1 or the original Point Break, I can guarantee that you're going to dislike the remake. So just keep Spider-Man there as a palate cleanser.
I might have to. And that was it for me. All right. Let's take a break. Here's the trailer for 1992's Passenger 57.
Ramsey wants me to hire the best person available to head up the counterterrorism unit. That person happens to be you.
I don't want that responsibility.
Get off the sidelines. You gotta get back into this game.
They finally captured the world's most dangerous hijacker. Now, they're bringing him back for trial. On a plane.
Notify my people. They'll know what to do.
That was their first mistake. Once again, Charles Rain is in control.
And how would you like your sirloin, sir?
Bloody.
But there's just one thing he didn't count on.
56, 57.
Passenger 57.
I watch your show all the time.
My show?
Never miss it. Woo!
Who's in charge?
I am.
Once again, who's in charge?
You are.
Wesley Snipes.
No, 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 this is not happening.
You, back to your seat.
I'm free!
His name's John Cutter. He's airline security.
Tell me you're good at this.
I'm the best.
Plan not working out the way you want it?
Don't flatter yourself, Cutter.
One way or the other, we're going down.
No, just chill out.
I'm one of the good guys.
Didn't your father ever teach you never send a boy to do a man's job?
Wesley Snipes.
You need help?
No. He's all mine.
Passenger 57.
You ever play roulette?
On occasion.
Let me give you a word of advice. Always bet on black.
Passenger 57 from 1992, directed by Kevin Hooks, who directed Fled and lots of television.
Shitload of TV.
Oh, yeah. The guy's still working hard on telly.
Mm.
Produced by Dan Paulson, who produced Full Court Miracle. It's a Disney basketball film, so one of us will be watching it.
Well,
I'm sure.
I was going to say, if it contained a monkey or an ape of some sort, you probably would have seen it.
Latest into Ape Shit version 3.
It was one of the crossover, you know, animal sports.
Animals in highly complex sports.
What's better suited than an ape or a monkey?
Yeah, they're closest to us. Lee Rich, who produced Hard to Kill, and Dylan Sellers, who produced Agent Cody Banks. The story's by Stuart Raffill, who actually wrote Mac and Me. Fucking hell. And Dan Gordon, who wrote The Hurricane. The screenplay is by David Lorelei, who wrote Money Train, and Dan Gordon as well. It stars noted tax enthusiast Wesley Snipes as John Cutter, Bruce Payne as Charles Rain, Tom Sizemore as Sly Del Vecchio, and Alex Datcher as Marty Slayton. Budget was $15 million, box office $66 million worldwide. This was initially offered to Seagal, and it was either this or Under Siege. They were both shooting at the same time. Seagal chose Under Siege. And there were no stunt doubles used for the final fight between Cutter and Rain. Wesley Snipes and Bruce Payne insisted on doing the scene themselves despite the protests of the producers.
Did Wesley miss an opportunity not following Ric Flair into finance?
No.
He could have teamed up.
24 months in jail says no, he didn't.
Yeah, but Rick was also a noted, you know.
Was Rick in jail at all?
I don't think he was in jail.
He was skirting the line, though, I'd say.
He had financial issues, and I believe there was some tax dodging at one point.
Yeah, but Rick was supposedly running a financial institution.
That's what I mean. Imagine that, Rick and Wesley's finance.
Fuck.
I'd imagine the advice would be just give us a slice, give us a cut of your money.
Wesley's advice is, I don't pay that.
Bills, forget it.
Sorry,
forget
tax.
About it.
What's tax? They told me I didn't have to pay it. So, yeah, imagine Rick and Wesley together. I'm sure it would be a very successful business. All right, Jared. Passenger 57. Tough one. Tough one for me. I haven't seen this in a while. I kind of fell down the center, 2.5. It's got moments that are okay. There's a couple of lines that I really thought were cool. Like they nail a couple of lines for Wesley Snipes. And Snipes has got that just enough B-grade sort of swagger and charisma to sell this. Plus he's pretty handy, not too bad as a martial artist. So that looks good on screen and helps. But there are a lot of strange fucking decisions with regards to how we even get on the plane with Charles Rain. There's strange decisions with regards to coming out of the air onto the ground, then back into the air, which I was kind of like, couldn't we have just stayed in the air?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that's the tightly wound tension thriller that you get in the air. But they make some weird reasons to go down there, and they've got all these side characters. Like the hillbilly cop down there, like, what? None of this sort of cuts any mustard for me. And then there's always that thing hanging over Cutter that he's sort of broken up, that his wife got killed in a robbery. But I'm like, where does this come back anywhere? How does this impact on him?
Mm-hmm.
Impacts on him for like 5 minutes at the start. So I went 2.5.
Fair. I was the same. I feel like there's nothing really that stands out and is super memorable in terms of like set pieces, acting performances, action sequences. As you said, I think some of the stronger stuff is, they get close to a couple of the memorable action movie lines. It's a must. Got to have them in there somewhere.
Yep.
But, yeah, the decisions that you mentioned, I had some similar queries. They don't use the plane very well for something that's marketed as a thriller on a plane, basically. And the stuff that you mentioned about certain characters, I think there's so many just bland, forgettable ones in there. And so nothing really stands out as joining the upper tier action, anything really.
No.
So even Wesley, who I thought was good, it's still well away from a top level kind of action movie bit of work. So I was a 2.5 as well.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I thought the cast was a B-grade cast of B-grade sort of stars, would you say?
Mm-hmm.
Serviceable enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Like if you're making,
I've got something to say.
You got a $15 million budget here. This is who you're attracting.
Yeah,
Wesley's fine.
Tom Sizemore's pretty good.
Sizemore's okay. It's got guys like Bruce Greenwood with a fucking shocking mullet. Like Brucey Greenwood needed to cut the hair before that. And look, the girl that plays Marty is okay, but once again, and I'm probably jumping ahead here, but she disappears.
Yeah.
In an 80-minute picture, she just disappears.
Adam, we're still in the likes.
Yeah, I know. I mean, shit. Sorry. But I would say this.
You're just diverting yourself.
It's, they're nothing special, but it's serviceable enough to make it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would single out the names that we mentioned. Beyond that, I actually, funnily enough, I thought Liz Hurley was okay.
Yeah, she was
considering
okay.
She wasn't an actress.
No, she was perfectly fine.
I think she was perfectly fine. Outside of that, I think there's a clear line between the positives and negatives. And as you said, a couple of the bit players, like the real bit players, they're okay. You need the people that are on screen a bit longer to do better work, I feel.
Correct.
For the most part.
80 minutes, mate.
Oh, short, sharp. It's a definite like.
Over quick.
Especially when, you know, if I go into an action movie these days, I'm not sure whether it's going to be 2.5 hours or not.
Fucking hell. Exactly. And I understand great set pieces and shit, but if you haven't got them, which this doesn't, 80 minutes is...
Yeah.
80 minutes is perfectly serviceable for me.
Yeah.
In fact, it's probably about 77 because we roll into the credits.
Long. It's not
good
long.
Stuff, mate. I'm all for that.
Yep.
I do like the idea of being on a plane. And I said at the start, I don't feel like that was used well enough.
No.
But I do like the idea of close confines. It's a location that can work. If you put some effort into it.
The setup from Wesley Snipes' side of things is fine. It's the other side of things that's a bit silly.
Is it? I don't know. It sounded pretty fucking reasonable to me. And I can tell you now, Jared, in 1992, I would have said it was a docker.
Oh, God. It's just... Yeah, you know, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, but what I mean is, and I come to probably my... Just skipping I'll come back to a couple of lines of dialogue that Rain gets in when he's first on the plane, which I found to be quite humorous, involving one that says, "Is your father still alive?" And his response is, "Died violently."
Yes.
I was like, okay, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
And then when the FBI guy orders chicken and he's like, "How appropriate."
Yeah.
I actually thought
I actually thought his best moment in the movie was with the little kid.
Yes.
I thought that was excellent. And then that starts the conversation, and I loved the bit where they said, you know, you're not going to get any toys or whatever. And he's like, "I never had any toys. My father believed they'd warp my sense of values."
Yeah.
Kind of like, I thought that was probably some of his best stuff that he got in the movie.
I mean, and this will be interesting because we'll get to it in the dislikes, but I just wonder whether he was told to take this approach.
I don't know.
There's a very sort of low monotone kind of vibe to everything that he does.
Well, the way I looked at it was he was going for a dash of Hans Gruber and a heavy dose of Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, a little bit.
And it just
didn't work.
Didn't really. I don't think it worked. I know some people, you know, some of the reviews I read, they circled him as one of the highlights of the movie. I just didn't work that well for me.
I didn't think he was probably as bad as you thought he was.
No, he wasn't that bad, but I just don't think it was a standard. As you said, it was kind of one note. The whole performance was one level.
There's one other point where I got a bit of menace out of him that I liked, which comes a bit later on. But I feel like I also got a slight giggle out of the lady sitting next to Cutter. Fucking filling him head full of bullshit and then saying, "I love your show," and mistaking him for Arsenio Hall. I thought that was quite humorous.
Yes.
But the opening scene when they break a Rain out up in the air and Cutter's in the toilet, and that whole sequence of him trying to get out and get the phone, call, get back into the toilet, and then taking a hostage. And then Rain sort of turns it around on him. He's got Marty, and then he puts her. And initially, when he lets go of her, I was kind of like, "Oh, that's convenient."
Yeah.
But then he picks up a passenger, and he actually says it. He says, "You know, flight attendants take on a certain amount of risk. These people are, you know, they're innocent." And then he actually says to him, "You know, this is whatever his name is. Before you got involved, he had a wife and two kids," and then just shoots him in the head.
Yeah,
I like that. That was kind of good bad guy stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Bad guy being bad. But that whole sequence where he's coming, trying to come out of the toilet and make the call, it's there's a bit of tension there. There's a little bit of something in it. He keeps poking his head out through the door, have a look. I mean, I love these guys who go to the toilet to freshen up, Jared. I can tell you right now, Adam Axe will be security specialist to be halfway through a log while they're over there.
There's no freshening the up.
And I'll be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Mind you, those fucking aircraft toilets, you can't turn around in there. You can't turn from one side to the other. So... I wouldn't be in there for long.
I remember having a case of the shits on like a on a 6-hour flight or something.
Adam,
one time.
Why every time there's something happens in a movie does it remind you of a time one time when you had the shits in a similar situation?
Clearly I've got dietary issues, Jared, because we continue to talk about me having the shits in different places.
Please go on.
But I can tell you right now, Jared, taking like 6 shits in a fucking in a fucking bathroom is not pleasant
no,
in any way.
No.
Not only was I pissing off the other passengers because I was constantly waiting there.
Did you just come out and then rejoin the line?
I was the only one. I was middle seat too, so the poor prick sitting next to me had to fucking have me climb shit over him. What's wrong with me?
Oh, shit. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Put yourself together.
Was he fucking seething?
I mean, he was seething. And, you know, I can tell you right now, I was probably stinking a touch too.
Fuck. Yeah.
Not good. Shit. Okay, let's get back to the film.
Yep.
So I really liked that. I actually thought that was a good bad guy moment.
Yeah,
where he shot the hostage.
I thought that period of the movie was definitely the best stuff from Rain.
And I like the way he took that bloke down. You know, he comes out of the toilet going, don't shoot me, don't. And he just fucking takes the gun off
him. He goes, don't shoot me. Then you're going, excuse me, Claire, bring up. No, I need to get in there.
He'd go to open the door and I'd be like, it's occupied. Jesus Christ. It's occupied and it will be for a fucking period of time.
Yeah. Not even that, you know, that strong fucking... After you've done it, when you hit the button, they're not even that's going to fix it. That's not taking the smell with it.
No. And honestly, there are a couple of times I may as well have just sat there after I'd flushed and gone again. Jesus Christ.
Remind me never to travel on a plane with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had my issues. So, I like this short little knife fight. In the galley.
Yes.
That was quite good.
And Snipes isn't bad in that hand-to-hand
stuff. Yeah, he's handy. He moves well. It's clear he's well-trained. Like, and he looks good on screen as opposed to some of these guys who, you know, it doesn't look as good on screen even though they are good at it. I'm looking at you, Seagal.
Yeah.
I'm pointing you out.
Yeah.
Always bet on black.
Good line.
That is one of the better action hero one-liners,
in
my opinion.
Yep.
It works a treat, and he delivers with gusto, Wesley.
I mean, he brings it out of nowhere. He has to bring up roulette to actually drop the line.
What happens if Ray said, I don't know anything about it?
Yeah, no, I never played it.
Well,
can you tell me
well,
about
what
it?
What happens is red and is black.
So that's the problem that I didn't really – it doesn't really flow naturally.
Yeah, it's not into, like you're know, guy A, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't sort of come into the conversation by the villain's
no.
hands.
You know, and it's not as quippy as let off some steam in a steamy environment. But
yeah, when he's been run through with a fucking pole or a steam pole or whatever.
But yeah, good line.
I like it. And Wesley delivers it well.
He does.
Look, I felt the film was pretty averagely directed, but there's a shot of the plane coming down over the top of the fucking carnival, right over the top of like the Ferris wheel. And it's clearly close. It's clearly flying low. It looks fucking awesome. Like, really, really cool shot. Because you get that idea of everyone's having fun and then this fucking thing just goes over the top. You know, you can imagine the sound and shit of it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. I did like Rain telling the hit cops that Cutter was one of his men who jumped ship.
Mm.
You know, he fucked me over.
Yeah, look, the idea of that works far better than the execution.
Yeah,
of
it didn't execute well because they...
I mean, the way that he says it, you're immediately listening to him going, But you're right. I think it, you know,
it was a good idea to run with.
Yeah, but you didn't. You also didn't. You almost didn't need it because they didn't believe him anyway.
Yeah. It seemed weird that they kind of shifted into that anyway, but I like the idea of the villain taking that approach to try and undermine Cutter's
efforts.
And,
yeah.
But you needed a bit more salesmanship on it.
I agree. I thought the concept of that was fine. But, yeah, just when the line comes out, it just sounds so – I mean, it sounds like he's being fucking sarcastic and silly when he's saying it.
Yeah.
And the cop just eats it up.
Yeah. Now, this was Rain's other menacing moment that I actually thought was okay, is when he corners Marty in the plane the second time when they're on their way out.
Mm.
And he sort of hits her up.
Unsavory comments.
Makes an unsavory comment, and she says something about, I can't remember what she says, and he basically says he would kill her. Doing it is what he says. And it's unsavory, but there was a bit of menace behind the way he kind of says it. And he's already sort of set up the fact that she slapped him and everything like that, so she's not going to have it. So he's kind of up the ante a touch. And so I thought, from a menace perspective, that was probably the only other time that I got that from him.
Mm.
Put yourself in my place, what would you do? I'd kill myself, says Wesley. Which I thought was. I laughed out loud.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny, pretty well handled. Not much left here.
No.
I like the way they shot the police car driving actually onto the tarmac under the plane. That was a cool sort of bit of stunt work.
I'm reasonably positive on the punch-up to finish it off.
Yes. Yeah, that was positive,
Because as we said,
Wesley takes his leaks.
Yeah, there's not big set pieces. I liked there was one where Wesley's like clambering over a couple of the seats and things, and I'm like, well, that's kind of what it'd be like.
You're
in
close combat,
enclosed space with not a lot of room, and so I didn't mind that little
defo to finish it off. He cops a bit of heat, bit of a flogging.
Yeah,
because he's actually being strangled as he's trying to get him out of the plane, and so he's kind of in a bit of shit. So I like that.
Yep,
but that was it for me.
Yes.
I did not have anything else.
I was a bit light on in the back end of the film.
Okay, straight into it. Being 80 minutes hurts the fact action. There's not that much action.
No, there's not. And it kind of ties into the plane thing. Like, I feel they get off the plane to do a bit of that because the plane is, number one, I feel like they probably could have done more in the plane, but number two, it feels like they get off the plane so they can have a bit of open space. They can have cars
chasing.
But it just stretches the believability a little.
But because the set pieces aren't that good, that doesn't help either. You got off the
plane,
you took away the tense atmosphere.
And I dug the fact that he pulls the whatever he does to make him start dropping the fuel.
Mm.
They hit the runway in a place that shouldn't be able to accommodate that size plane. And so we're in a small town with the fair going on and stuff like that. I kind of like that, but again, I don't feel like they used it. It was really only the guy going off the Ferris wheel, and that was it.
Yeah, you needed to have real kick-ass set pieces there.
Yeah.
But then that would have...
What about a car chase in the Dodgems?
Yeah, I can get in there. Like, you're basically doing circle work. But you know what, though? The problem for me, because I checked the time when they hit the ground and it was like 40 minutes. I was like, what, 40 minutes?
Mm.
Why are we on the ground now? Like, I could have seen it going one of two ways, which I felt would have been better. It stays in the air the whole time. And it would be less of an action and more of a thriller.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to, Wesley's trying to get in contact with the ground and get them to help him and all that stuff.
And it's hard to do action scenes in a confined space like the
But yet what you had, though, is Wesley as a handy martial artist, which I think would have gone all right.
Yeah, I think they should have done more in the plane. Yeah. I think they should have looked at more that they could have got out of the plane.
Agreed.
But I think you're right. I reckon they, if they were going to do that, maybe they should have dropped it earlier. They should have had it come down earlier than 40 minutes.
Maybe. Or even the opposite direction. If you could extend the plane just a little bit longer.
And bring it down.
Then bring it down and finish it on the ground.
Yeah. Because essentially they do.
Yeah, and then that plane takes off and then he gets back on it for like a 5-minute stretch.
Maybe that's the play. You bring it down and it's coming to a head.
Yeah.
On the ground.
Because I kind of feel like him getting arrested and stuff kind of fucking slows everything down for a few minutes.
Yeah, it does.
And then at one point, Rain gets arrested. Like, I was just scratching my head going, what the fuck's happening?
Yeah, it was trying to keep twisting and turning, but it didn't really have a fucking clear direction.
It was like
one
of those
things
they have at used car joints, you know, where
the fucking floppy man or whatever.
Floppy things with the little men that flop around. That's basically what
it was. Yeah, the story's going, we're going ahead. Oh, no, we're not flopping around again. we're going this way, then we're going that way. Yeah.
Rain saying you'll knock back gas for plastic surgery. Good on you, mate. Like,
yeah.
If you'd like to die, sure.
Well, that line, I mean, it's not a minute after the credits finish.
Yeah.
And we've got him dropping, I never live in the past. And then fucking he gets offered the gas and whatever. It's like, you got to have something for the pain. There will be no pain. And kind of just,
yeah,
I'm sitting there going,
oh my God.
He'd almost lost me just on that.
That was like frog shit.
That's where that fucking delivery was just not working for me.
It was too flat. Too flat.
It's
like, there
just
was no
goofy
personality to it.
It was just goofy. And I don't necessarily think the guy's a bad actor. I think there was probably plenty to suggest that he's got plenty to offer, but it just felt like a misfire.
It kind of worked in certain portions of the film, but not.
Not
it was played the whole way.
Yeah.
But also, if you watch Hannibal Lecter, yes, he has that kind of like monotone, but there is kind of like this charisma or whatever that comes with the Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah,
kind of, he draws you in.
Yeah.
You're not getting drawn in by Rain.
Was that the stupidest part of the film?
Yes.
Him talking about having plastic surgery.
The funniest bit
the
of that
time.
Was that you come outside to the FBI guys and they're like,
yeah. He keeps changing his face.
He keeps changing his face, and all I got a flash of was him fucking as Jocelyn Wildenstein.
The first thing that popped into my head was if this was realistic.
He looked like one of
the guys, the FBI was rocking up and saying, "We're looking for Mickey Rourke,"
or someone who looks vaguely like Mickey Rourke.
It's kind of it's so silly. We never hear of it again past that point.
Even when he wrote, like, he what? And also, I'll bring this up later, but his fucking plans once he lands down at the fairground. I mean, what the fuck was he going to do?
He was looking for the local plastic surgeon.
Him and his cronies go, okay, we'll head this way.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm going to get a corn dog. I'll see you guys
around about plastic surgery around these parts.
And we'll circle back and I'll meet you out the front of the Tilt-A-Whirl.
And remember, don't get caught up on the cha-cha and fucking miss your spot. Jesus Christ.
I think I just couldn't stop laughing at that plastic surgery stuff because once they left it there, I'm like, well, why the fuck did we even bother? Why didn't we just have him fucking on the run?
But also, Jared, if you're going to do that, have him in a fucking back alley mob.
Yeah.
Not in fucking Cedar Sinai. You know what I mean? Fuck.
Oh, shit. Now that we're bringing that up.
And the
it
doctor's
also
fucking hopeless. You can clearly see he's waiting for the cops. He looks up.
Yeah, yeah. They should have busted in and it should have looked like that meme of the guy going, I can't feel my face. Like, It's just so silly.
I love the fact that SWAT, when SWAT comes in, they don't leave a small group out the front.
No.
They all come in.
They all burst through in and fucking funnel into the little room. It should have been like fucking, they got stuck in the doorway. Three of them trying to run through the doorway at the same time. You go, oh, fuck.
Oh, shit. All right.
Yeah.
So, and I know they try and explain this away, Jared, so I'll give them at least some credit for trying to explain it. But this guy is one of the world's worst plane bombers, right? That's what we're told.
Yeah.
Why in fucking God's name would you put him on a plane?
Yeah, exactly.
To get him to California.
I mean, that's one of the big questions that's always been brought up about the movie, isn't it?
Oh, it has. But they mention it later that the FBI did that.
But they don't even explain it. They just.
Oh, the FBI did it.
They don't explain it. They just acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the FBI didn't tell us. Oh, great. Okay. But why? We still don't have a why.
Let me tell you something, mate. That guy's fucking getting driven to California in a fucking small hatchback.
Exactly. He's getting a car full of agents and they're all bundling in.
Sleeping and overnight,
he gets
the
fucking
radiator.
Middle seat.
Yeah.
So he's got to fucking squeeze in there. Fuck it. And we're going on a tandem bike and you're doing most of the peddling.
Yeah. And you're at the front and you're fucking shackled hand to foot to nutsack.
Yeah.
And you are basically riding us back to California.
The other funny part to that is the mother of the small child that does the gun.
Yeah.
Thing at him. Yeah. She asks, is that man in handcuffs dangerous? Oh, fuck. No. What do you think?
No, we put people in handcuffs for fun.
We're just testing him out.
He's just another agent.
That's okay. David Copperfield. He's just fucking practicing for when we land. He's got a gig on.
No, it's just one of our mates. It's a rookie agent. Fucking fart ass.
Hazy.
This is hazy.
Yeah, wait till he falls asleep. We're going to draw a dick on his fucking forehead.
So this is really just the early part of the hazing ritual.
Nothing to worry about. we're going to be chugging beers through our asses in about 15 minutes if you're interested.
Yeah, as soon as the seatbelt goes off, I'm getting the fucking beer bong out of
the cart
my cabin
down.
Fucking bag.
Yeah. The cart comes down, there's three blokes with their bum holes facing you going, 3 VVs, thanks.
Throw a small bottle of Jack into me butthole, will ya? I need to pick me up.
I have to watch Blockers. I must do it now.
You have to. It's fucking. For some reason, I also get a laugh out of Ike Barinholtz having his scrotum squeezed.
That's just one of your all-time favourites, isn't it? Toxic Avenger being punched in the scrotum. Steve Martin in his chains automobiles blowing up with a high voice after being squeezed in the scrotum.
That is the fucking heist of comedy.
Funnily enough,
if
you
fucking
might
Steve Martin's prepared to do that, Jared, that's highbrow, in my opinion.
I was about to say, funnily enough, you might want to check out Dirty Work because Norm MacDonald does something very similar.
Oh, does he? Shit, well, that'll be high on the list then. Now, yep. Jared, I think this is what initially drew Seagal to the script. When we see Wesley with no shirt on fucking burning incense and punching shit in his fucking apartment.
Yeah.
And then also, for some fucking god-awful reason, seems to think turtlenecks are the way to go.
No, Wesley.
With a collared business shirt over the top. When have you ever seen that?
Well, you can probably think of a few music artists and things that have tried similar.
If you're
similar
on the fucking baseball diamond, they do that. But shit. He's got an orange one on when we first met. I was like, Wesley, fucking stop listening.
He's also got the Van Damme style tight, high and tight look with the band.
He's got the jeans a little tight. And at one point he's wearing sort of the pressed chinos.
Yeah.
You know, when he's doing his his security training work? Jesus Christ, Wesley. Yeah. And they keep saying he's the best. He's the fucking best. At best at what? Like, I never quite got that either. Like, they never really explained that very well. They talk about counterterrorism.
Mm.
And I did find it. I actually got a slight chuckle when he says, yeah, how many airlines have been hijacked in the last 3 years? And he's like, 29 of them. And he goes, only one hasn't. And he says, the Israelis. Nobody fucks with the Israelis. And I was like, yeah. They won't let him on the plane. I understand that.
Yeah.
I don't like his nickname. He's known as the Reign of Terror, says some bloke, and I'm just like, that is just so fucking lame.
It's another one where you've just named it that because you thought that was a really cool nickname, didn't you?
Jesus Christ. Like, it was just like, it was deflating, Jared, where you sort of go, oh.
Yep.
Like, you were doing okay. You were doing okay.
We were doing all right, and then we started pulling that shit out.
Now, I've got a question, Jared, and it never really comes back around. It's kind of dropped. But did you get a vibe that Bruce Greenwood was going to hang Cutter out to dry when he tells Del Vecchio, don't say anything? If it all goes well, Cutter's on our security. It was a security thing. If it doesn't, he says we say nothing.
Yes.
But then it never really appears again?
No. And I thought that was going to be like the, Dwayne T. Robinson in Die Hard.
Dwayne T. Robinson.
And Del Vecchio was going to go against...
Against him?
Against him.
But it felt like a secondary villain for a minute. Well, and then just, I was like, this movie has not got time for a secondary villain.
It just left it. So
there's no secondary villains.
Do we dig up the script? See if there's it'd be
interesting to see whether or not there was some stuff removed.
Whether the plastic surgery came back. Maybe Bruce Greenwood was actually fucking Rain with a new face.
He turns around and goes, pulls his face off in front of everyone. We never found Rain's body.
And then he turns around and he's got a wet patch on his pants. He's like, sorry, we were just chugging beers on the plane.
We were celebrating.
I think it would be interesting to see whether some of that stuff was written or whether it was just tied up.
It really felt like they were going to try and screw Cutter.
Yeah, and again, why bother with it if it doesn't come back again?
Yeah, and also, that movie was fucking 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't got time for a secondary villain.
Yeah.
Rain is
your
villain.
Well, you do. Make it 83 minutes. You can shoot a couple more scenes.
Don't have any time for that shit.
I'm
glad that you took away the same thing I took out of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what the line is, nothing other than that, right? Like, we've got a scapegoat if we need it.
Yeah.
Del Vecchio gives a response, like a reaction to that, like,
what
the fuck's going on here? You know, like.
But that would have worked better when they hit the ground, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Instead of the fucking hit cops, the FBI grabs Cutter because they believe him to be the terrorist.
Yeah. Could have worked out a little better that way.
I mean, you only have to interview one person on the plane and say, no, it wasn't that guy.
Yeah.
It was a fucking silly-looking white dude.
Well, bringing that up, I get the complication that the sheriff provides, but as you kind of said, I didn't feel it was super effective.
No.
Especially two things. One, the fact that he listens to Rain when Rain... I think that was more about the delivery or the writing of the lines or whatever that just made it sound so ridiculous that you would listen to that and just go, nah, I'm not buying that. But secondly, it's a bit of a shame. Well, no, I'll come back to that too. But yeah, no, I think you're right. Perhaps it would have worked better if we just leave that stuff to the FBI.
Yeah.
Because the other part of that I was sort
and
of going to mention
Cutter
here
gets
is that-
him, get, tells him to get in contact with Greenwood, who then fucking washes his hands of him straight away.
Yeah. No, I think the part of it that I also think was a bit of an issue there was that once they get past that, the dynamic between the cop and Cutter is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
They have a couple of gags. Yeah, and he starts talking about his gun. He's like, you better give that back to me because it belongs to my wife. And, you know, the way Snipes is saying, I was led to believe all you guys out here would drove like fucking maniacs or whatever. And he's like, I haven't had a challenge like that since high school.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff was good.
Yes.
Like, fuck, we could have done with that in the midst of all this shit where they were butting heads. Or if they're butting heads, do it like that. Give the cop guy some credit.
Yeah.
And have him kind of,
he becomes,
you know,
an
not
ally.
Convinced, but not necessarily just somewhat kind of dopey in that situation, and have him having a bit of back and forth with Snipes that's fun like that, but actually places him in a position where he might actually be able to help once they get through this, you know, you can't prove who you are, so I'm a little bit skeptical kind of phase.
Yeah. Well, I think if you could have used it that way when Rain contacts him to, and that's where he twigs that Cutter is who he says he
is. Or the
I'm
cops
onto you. I'm-
should be onto the company, and Bruce Greenwood's saying,
John Cutter, never heard of the guy.
Yeah. Like you said.
Cutter. So, never heard of the guy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So perhaps that would have been something to explore and kind of work around it, because that would have given him a reason to be going against, better than Rain saying it. That's coming from
the head.
The head.
Of the company.
Yeah.
Which was exactly what they was trying to say. And Greenwood screws him without Del Vecchio knowing about it. Like,
yeah,
Del Vecchio's not on the ground yet, so he can't intervene.
Yes. I feel that would have worked better.
Easily better.
Mm.
Just some of the shootouts and the action scenes at the fairground, they have a real kind of TV feel. And no surprise that Kevin Hooks makes his bread on TV these days, but it's just, they just didn't feel big, large scale enough for me. Like, you needed to really nail this bit.
Mm.
Because the plane didn't have that opportunity, did it? You couldn't do that. Couldn't blow anything up.
They weren't really doing
anything
on the plane.
So we need to blow something up large, you know, down on the ground. We needed to have a huge car chase or a fucking massive shootout. Burn the whole place down.
Yeah.
The fair is fucking over, kiddies.
Yeah.
The place is blown up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fuck. If you're going to stop and set the movie in there, fucking do something with it.
But also, you didn't have enough thugs.
Have a shootout across the Gravitron while both parties are vomiting.
We're all chundering on each other.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough thugs, Jared.
Oh, well, this is one of my dislikes, is that no one in the crew is very memorable, really, outside of Rain and Elizabeth Hurley.
Yes.
The rest of them are just kind of there. There was one early on that had, it looked like he'd wandered off the set of the Iron Claw with it.
Is he the guy with that fucking ridiculous bloody earring as
he's
well?
He's got the big curly hair.
And she calls him Mr. Forget.
Oh, no, not him.
No, not Forget.
The first one.
Oh, the first guy. Yeah.
He's
looks
got
like
the big
Kenny
curly
G.
mop. Yeah. So there's just no one outside of that gives you a, you know, a Mr. Joshua or a, you know,
no.
the Carl in Die Hard or anything like that. Like, it's
memorable sort of second tier villains.
Yeah.
And there was none of that. And there wasn't enough of them. So when they do hit the ground, he's only looking for three of them.
Yeah.
I think. So there's no room for a nice solid punch up or a massive shootout where a heap of them are getting shot and stuff like that. You know what I mean? There wasn't enough room for that.
No.
So that was a unfortunate sort of
the fair
side
was
effect,
a big, the fair was a big miss.
Yes.
Surely you can figure out a cool punch up in a fair environment.
Yes. You're in the fucking haunted hotel.
yeah.
Some bloke leaps out of the shadows.
It's like Grease, the fucking floor's moving and you're punching on in the middle of it.
Fucking dish. It also seems like Elizabeth Hurley takes the entire rap.
Yeah,
the only
she
one
does. She comes out with a massive fat lip, sitting in the back of the truck, looking like bloody, I don't know. She kind of looks like Gru from
It's like she's taking the rap because everyone else is dead.
Yeah, you're taking the fall for this one.
Jesus. Whereas I'm just saying, look, I was just on the fly.
She's sitting there going, I should have gone into modelling.
Yeah. What was I doing? The last thing for me was the dodgy effects when Rain falls out the fucking side of the plane.
Yeah.
Not convincing at all.
No. I mean, it's not RoboCop level or Broken Arrow level.
No,
or
not quite, but they should have just had him fall and that's it.
Yeah.
You don't need to see it.
No.
I mean, once you fall out of a plane, I think it's pretty stock standard that you're not going to survive.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You'd imagine that would be the case.
Yeah, not many people have fallen from a great height like that and survived, I would have thought.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Same.
All right, that was Passenger 57. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Podomatic, and all the places that you get your podcasts. Send us an email at thrillme@iinet.net.au. Like us on Facebook at Thrill Me Podcast Australia, at Podomatic at thrillme.podomatic.com. We're also on Instagram at thrillmepodcastau. Keep an eye on the Facebook page for details of the next movie. But until then, take it easy and we'll catch everyone later. Cheers.
Find the podcast at Podomatic or on iTunes. Don't forget to rate and review. Like us on Facebook at Thrill Me Podcast Australia or contact us at thrillme, all one word, all lowercase, at iinet.net.au.